This is iWine Radio, first in Wine Talk.
Hi, I'm Jerry Dawes. You can find out more about me by Googling me, Jerry Dawes, GerryDawes. And keep on listening to Wine and Dine. It's a marvelous program, and I feel really privileged to have been on it.
Welcome to Wine and Dine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo-Chamberlain.
Hi there. This is Andreas Larson.
Hi, this is John Capon.
My name is Mathur Jaffrey.
Hi, my name is Heike Platter. I'm from the Alto Adige region, or Südtirol.
Hi, my name is Paul Dolan. I am absolutely passionate about growing organic and biodynamic fruit for our wines.
Hello, my name is Lorena Garcia.
Hello, my name is Fritz Maytag.
This is Joyce Bach. I'm the author of Foodie Fight.
Hi, this is Lydia Mandavi, founder of 29 Cosmetics.
Cheers, this is Rob Barnett, CEO and founder of FinVillage.com, where wine lovers connect.
Today we're going to have the pleasure of meeting somebody who I met a couple years ago when I was in Spain. I can't believe that it really has been two springs, I think. Time has flown by that fast. Jerry Dawes is basically known as Mr. Spain, and he just returned from 8 weeks in Spain. And Jerry's going to be a regular contributor on iWine Radio on his when he's in Spain in the future and give us updates. And Jerry, when you were in Spain this last time for 8 weeks, did you go anyplace new, or were you, I know that you said that you were dealing with or studying cheese in one region, but are you doing updates with people, or are you actually visiting new areas or new producers?
Well, this one happened to be in Asturias, which is in northern Spain on the Atlantic coast, an absolutely gorgeous region with beautiful mountains, valleys, rushing rivers, and a really bucolic scene there, because the cheese country in eastern Asturias has sort of saved the rural qualities of the area by providing income for people making and selling cheeses and raising the cows, the sheep, and the goats for the milk for the cheeses. So they maintain the really wonderfully bucolic quality to them. And the cheeses are incredible. In fact, the area in that area is called the National Park of Cheeses.
Really?
Something like 50, 60, 70, maybe even 100 small farmhouse cheeses of varying styles, but really, really some spectacular stuff and a spectacular place to travel.
Were you commissioned to write about the cheeses, or is this for your own work on your website?
Well, I was commissioned an article. They didn't expect me to go to Asturias, but that's the way I am. You commissioned me for an article, and whether you're paying expenses or not, I ended up going because I want to know what I'm talking about. So yeah. I visited 10 different cheese producers. I visited also a wonderful cider producer who's producing a kind of Calvados style spirits and liqueurs in that region. And I tasted some low alcohol Asturian wines along with it and had some wonderful food while I was there.
You say low alcohol, so does that mean that perhaps the wines will not travel so well or good candidates for export?
Oh, they travel okay. You just have to understand they're 12% alcohol. A lot of wines used to be 12, 12.5, 13%.
Okay.
One of the plagues, the way I see it this day in so-called modern wines, is this over-alcoholic wines, which get very tiresome to drink. And
yeah.
Not only that, if you split them with your significant other on a Wednesday night, they have to not make you feel that well the next morning sometimes.
You're actually bringing back memories of the trip that we were on. You and I are on the same page as far as that goes. I really do not personally enjoy drinking high-alcohol wines. I'd rather have a martini.
Well, actually, you're right. I would rather have a margarita. And I make some of the best margaritas in the world. Maybe one of these days when we're talking, I'll give you the recipe.
Okay.
But if I give you the recipe, then I have to kill you.
So, Jerry, where else did you visit in Spain this last trip?
Oh, it was pretty active. Actually, in January, I went to Madrid Fusion and got the blockbuster announcement that Ferran Adrià was closing El Bulli in 2 years. Then I went to Galicia on a wine tour because I've been going to Galicia a lot because the wines there run from 12.5 to 13.5% and seldom reach 14% where most other wines start. So yeah. I found a marvelous bunch of wines up there in Galicia and wine areas, mostly from small producers like you'd find in Burgundy or Loire Valley.
Okay.
Who have their own vineyards. A lot of them use their own yeast, native grapes. They're grown in mountain climates in some absolutely stunningly beautiful places. There's some varieties you've probably never heard of that are just wonderful. So I went up there, and then I actually had to go back for another conference where Ferran was speaking. So I ended up staying there for 5 weeks. I got home for 3 weeks, and then they called me back to go to Asturias. I decided to go to Asturias because I got invited to Alimentaria in Barcelona, which is this mega huge biennial food and wine fair and exposition. And then I went back to where we were in Montsant Priorat when I was there with you 2 years ago. I went back and spent 4 more days in Montsant, not in that wonderful Mas Figueres where we stayed, but in a new hotel that's out on a country road, a concrete road 3.5 kilometers from Capçanes, and saw a bunch of more wineries and wine people. It's quite a marvelous hotel called Mas Collet, C-O-L-L-E-T, in the town of, outside the town of Capçanes. It's quite beautiful. It's quite isolated. It's quite modern. A wonderful place. A friend of mine runs it. She also owns the Pizzeria,
which
is like pizzeria, but with a V. I think we may have eaten there. The Pizzeria is sort of the wine person's pizzeria, but it's more than a pizzeria. They have designer pizzas, you know, gourmet pizzas, plus they have a lot of other typical Catalan dishes, and it's really quite good. And you walk into the place, you're liable to see winemakers, from famous winemakers from Priorat, from one end to the other, you know.
Wow. I'm going to back up a bit. When you're saying, when you were talking about the wines of Galicia that you tasted and discovered, most people know of Galicia, at least in the United States, for the Albarino, right?
Well, Albarino, yes, and there's some wonderful Albarinos, and the average person can go in and pick up an Albarino and be quite satisfied with it.
Yes.
I have a sort of a different view. I think a lot of them made with industrial yeast tend to taste alike, and they have lots of tropical fruit, if you like that kind of thing, pineapple and banana and mango and stuff like that sort of evokes that kind of flavors. But the real down-home Albarinos that use native yeast have more white peach and mineral qualities, which I really like, you know, and they go really well with food. I also think that some of the wines are being sweetened up a little bit, which
really
I'm too fond of. I like really dry.
Mm-hmm.
I like dry wines, you know.
Me too.
I don't mind a sweet wine when it's supposed to be sweet, but I prefer not to have much residual sugar in my wine.
Yeah, me too. Now, are those wines exported, or do you have to be traveling to Spain?
Well, as a matter of fact, some of them are, not all of them, but the things you should look for to try these wines, of course, you could find Albarinos quite easily because we're the most important export wine market for Albarino in the world, actually. United States is. A lot of American chefs have taken to them because they go so well with all kinds of food. Not only that, Albarinos are good for aperitif wines. You know, they're not like a Sancerre or a Muscadet, which goes much better with food. They're great wines, but go much better with food. But they're a little too acidic and a little too dry just to sit around and sip as an aperitif sometimes. But Albarinos are not like that. They're very, very versatile. However, I'm finding outside of Albarino, which comes from the area of Rias Baixas, the lower fjords of Galicia, quite striking, beautiful country with these wonderful coves, that inlets that come in from the sea and pierce into the sort of interior of Galicia. There are other denominations besides Rias Baixas. There's Ribeiro, which has some marvelous white wines that are blends of several different grapes, up to 6 different white wine grapes.
Wow.
There's Ribera Sacra, which I swear to you, as beautiful as Priorat was, and you knew, you saw Priorat, Ribera Sacra, in my opinion, is the most beautiful wine region I've ever seen in the world.
Oh, my heaven.
That includes the Mosel in Germany, the Rhine, Champagne, Burgundy, the Rhone Valley, and the Loire Valley. The Loire Valley is spectacular. But this place, Ribera Sacra, is something like 200 kilometers of curvy roads that wind along the Mino and the Seal River, and even have boats running on them. They've dammed up rivers now, and they've these huge canyons, and the incline on a lot of these vineyards, vineyards which are on terraces that were even used and put there actually by the Romans years ago, obviously years ago, 3,000 years ago in some cases. And there's slate terraces, the most incredible terroir. And sometimes there are some places that are, were isolated enough that they were bringing the grapes down from the vineyards to the river and putting them on boats and taking them to the winery to press.
Oh, my.
I mean, it's absolutely spectacular. If you have vertigo, you don't want to go there.
Yeah, yeah.
If it doesn't bother you, it's stunning. The scenery's stunning. The region's stunning. The wines run from 12 to 13%. And a 0.5% alcohol. Some people are trying to make wines that are not of the region and it tastes like something from somewhere else.
Yeah.
But generally, those wines, you can find something, some of them are rustic, but they have good acid, they have good balance, and they're really wonderful with food. So if you see Ribera Sacra, R-I-B-I-E-R-A, Sacra, S-A-C-R-A, try one of those wines, the reds, or try some of the whites. If you see a white, try that. Then you have Valdeoras.
Hold that thought. Jerry, we have to go to a short break here. We'll only be taking just a moment, and then we'll set up again for the second segment, okay?
Yes.
We'll be right back with Jerry Dawes, Mr. Spain, on Wine and Dine.
Hello, my name is Gerard Amoros. I am the manager of the Dio Montsan in the northeast region of Spain, and I invite you to know more about our wines in our website, www.diomontsan.com.
My name is Miguel Torres, and I am president of the Torres Wine Company, family-owned company. Please come to visit us. We are near Barcelona, and you can also visit our website, TorresWines.com.
Hi, this is Victor Gallegos, co-owner and director of winemaking, and my wife.
And Catherine Gallegos, I'm co-owner and official grape harvester and cellar slave for Melisse and Elix, two wines that we make in the Priorat appellation of Spain. And we would suggest that anyone interested in purchasing our wines go to our website, Melisse Priorat, MelissePriorat.com. We would love to have you join our list.
My name is Lynn Grillo Chamberlain, host of Wine and Dine. We're continuing our conversation with Jerry Dawes, who is literally known as Mr. Spain in the United States, in wine circles, and certainly throughout Spain. Everybody knows the name Jerry Dawes. And as you can tell by listening to Jerry, he's very opinionated. But, Jerry, how many years have you been visiting Spain? Like 30 years, 35 years?
Well, one of the reasons I'm opinionated is because I've been traveling there for 40 years, and I know what I'm talking about.
Exactly, 40 years. Correct me if I'm wrong. As I recall, your first visit to Spain was through your service in the military.
Yeah, I was in the Navy for 4 years, and I happened to be lucky enough to have been sent to Rota, Spain for the last 2 years of my hitch, and actually after I got out of school, and I was sent to Rota, Spain, fell in love with Spain. I walked out the front gate with $500 at the end of 1969 and stayed six more years, and I've been going back ever since.
And you didn't know a lick of Spanish, right, at that point?
Yeah, I lived there a total of 8 years. Then my ex-wife got pregnant with our first child, and we were pregnant with the first child, and we moved to New York.
Did she live with you in Spain for a while?
Yeah, we were there for about 4 years together, or 5 years together.
Okay. Okay.
Almost six, actually.
So now, we cut you off before going to break. You were talking about the reds also of the region.
Well, I started explaining to you the Valdeoras, which has both the reds of Ribera Sacra that I was talking about before, made mostly with a Mencia grape. In Valdeoras, there's some reds made with Mencia, but the primary grape there is Godello, which I think is maybe one of the five greatest white wine grapes in the world.
Godello. How do you spell that?
Godello.
Okay.
It's a marvelous grape, and it makes wines that have these wonderful white peach mineral flavors when they're made right, when they're not barrel fermented to the point that they taste more like oak and butterscotch than wine.
Yeah.
And they're not botanized to death, so they taste more like yeast and barrel fermentation than wine.
You just gave people a lesson there on where flavors are coming from.
Well, I prefer my flavors to come from the soil, the vineyards, the climate, the region, the native grapes, and so on.
Yes.
That's making wines in the vineyards. Making wines in the winery is doing all the manipulation with barrel fermenting to give wines the flavor of oak, which is an artificial flavoring agent, in my opinion, and botanized, which is stirring dead yeast back into the wine to give it that flavor. Those flavors, those were used in Burgundy, Muscadet, Loire Valley, and places like that to add flavor to green wines. They have no place, in my opinion, in wines from California, wines from Spain, wines where they're ripe enough to begin with and have more than enough fruit, alcohol, and everything else. They put them in because reviewers who are not winemakers, 99% of reviewers are not winemakers, would be my guess, who pick up these buzzwords and then whip them around the horn so everybody starts putting it into their literature and doing that, and that's why we have so many what I think are really messed up wines that are just not good to drink.
They're clones of each other almost in the glass.
Yeah, they're made to this. They're made, there's a phrase that they use that drives me crazy. It's called, we're making wines that the market's asking for, and I just put my hand to my ear and I said, what market's asking for this stuff? They think the market is asking for it when it's a handful of reviewers who've used these buzzwords over and over, and they really have no application except for selling wine off of buzzwords instead of off of really, really great taste and really great compatibility with food.
So, Jerry, the few reviewers that you're talking about are basically, they have a monopoly on marketing via the numbers system and that sort of thing. You are a wine blogger yourself. Do you think that blogging is helping inform consumers about more diversity?
Well, immensely. There's a whole movement out there against all this stuff and against what's called parkerismo off of the wines that are made for palates like Robert Parker's. And a lot of young sommeliers don't want to know about this stuff, so restaurants are getting off that bandwagon, and the bloggers are really, really like a fifth column. They're out in an open rebellion against this stuff, high alcohol and so on. And a lot of people believe that's what wine is, but they don't have a 40-year perspective. I spent 20 years selling wine in New York City, the best restaurants. And wines like Schaefer were not 15%, 15.5%, 14.9% as it says on the label. They were 12.5% and 13% alcohol back then.
Yes.
And you get second bottle sales, you get second glass sales. Now everybody wants to make something that will hit the reviewer between the eyes, give him an uppercut and lay him out. because reviewers sometimes taste as many 50 wines when they're reviewing for publication.
Yes.
And that's not what you want when you sit down with your significant other on a Wednesday night to split a bottle of wine.
Right.
It's something that was supposed to knock out a reviewer instead of compliment your food.
Right, right. One must be able to get up and go to work the next day.
Yeah, and I find that if you have a bottle of wine every night, I'm tasting Garnaches right now, and the way I do it a lot of times is I'll just have a bottle with a meal, and I make notes when I start. And then if it doesn't get better with a meal, it starts to go downhill. And I find that we leave a third to a quarter of a bottle every night. And that's not good either if you're paying for it. In these cases, there's samples they're sent in.
Yeah.
And I'm not paying for it. Thank God, really would be angry. But I find that in restaurants, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence from sommeliers that a lot of people are leaving a third to a quarter of an expensive bottle on the table. And my solution to that, if they're going to continue to make those outrageously high alcohol wines, is to put them in half-liter bottles.
Okay.
To lower the price,
yeah.
To lower the price and cut down on the amount of alcohol you actually consume.
Right.
Anyway, back to the trips in Spain.
I mean,
there's more in Galicia, Monterrey, and places like that. And then I went on from after Galicia. I went back and I went to Asturias. I went to Barcelona. I went to Montserrat, and then I spent a week in Andalusia.
Really?
A couple of nights with my old friend in Sanlúcar de Barrameda, the producer Javier Hidalgo, the producer of La Gitana, Manzanilla Sherry.
Oh my God, that's my favorite.
Yeah, I had a marvelous time down there. Sanlúcar is like my spiritual home in Spain.
Oh my.
And I really would like to do a book on Sanlúcar with photos and interviews with the people at Bigote, that wonderful bar restaurant down there, and with Javier Hidalgo. And he's also a great bird expert, so we went out to Las Marismas, saw flamingos and slenderbill seagulls, and we actually saw Marismas cattle being herded by cowboys, but more to the point, some of them were grazing up to their chest, you might say, in water, grazing on aquatic plants.
Oh my.
It was spectacular.
Jerry, you threw out a word that I want to get in with this first conversation we have, and that is that you devote a lot of your energy and time to photography.
Yeah, I shot 2,000 photographs one day in Asturias, just to give you an idea. I was so excited by what I was seeing. It was a remarkable day. One of the 5 days I spent there, it was just, I must have shot 2,000 photographs that day.
Jerry, can people see a lot of your photographs and also find more information and links with the wines that you're talking about from your blog or your website?
Just Google me at Jerry Dawes, GerryDawes, and you'll see my blogs come up and my Insider's Guide to Spain. You'll find that, and you can find a lot of photographs on there. And then if anybody emails me about any particular thing they might be looking for, I can steer them to some Picasso web albums that have a slew of my photographs on them.
Okay.
I also run specialized only custom to people who come to me with a group. I run specialized food, wine, and culture tours to Spain, where you actually meet people, not just see buildings. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You interact with people. And I, it depends on the group and it depends on the budget and whatever and the number of days, but you come to me with a right number of people and a budget that we can work on, and I will design a tour specifically for the group of people. That's okay. Usually the only way that I do them.
Okay.
I also, if you go online, Epicurean Ways, she has a couple scheduled. I have one in October that's actually scheduled, but I usually do customized tours. They can be incentive tours for company, but mostly they're groups of friends. Or I did the Commonwealth Club in California. I did the Windows on the World when the World Trade Center Club, when the Windows on the World was still upright.
Okay.
And things like that. Groups of Air Force, Army Air Force Academy graduates.
Wow.
I've taken twice and so on.
Well, it makes sense that I would certainly want, you would be the man to be hosting or putting together a trip. Jerry, we could talk for days, and I just love listening to you because you just know it all, and I'm in line with your way of thinking. Jerry Dawes is Mr. Spain. He's talking to us from New York, and he's heading back to Spain. And we will have conversations with him probably in May and June from Spain. Jerry, thank you so very much for your time.
Thank you so much for calling, and I appreciate being on your program.
We will be continuing this conversation on Wine and Dine. You're listening to iWine Radio. iWine Radio is a production of Food Tastes Better with Wine on the web at iwineradio.com.